You're listening to In the Moment on SDPB. I'm Lori Walsh. South Dakota Governor Larry Rodin launches his homeowners tax relief program this week. He has been traveling the state on what's been called the Open for Opportunities Tour, and his new Project Prison Reset kicks off this week as well. We will start with property taxes. Gene Hunhoff, let's start at the beginning. For people who own a home, I'm buying a home in South Dakota, I have to pay property taxes. What am I being taxed on and where is that money going?
Well, the property tax goes to the counties, and by state statute, so much is collected for education based on a formula. The other is for county expenses. So those dollars reside at the county, and what that arrangement is depends on what the budget is of the county and what the budget is for the school districts in that county. But I think we should look a little historical perspective here.
Yeah.
You know, education has always sort of been in the forefront for, you know, the costs that are there that people seem to have the greatest angst in. But let's go back to when Jankel was in office, he was facing a property tax revolt. People were upset. So what did he do? He developed the video lottery. And the thought was video lottery, those revenues that were generated would go to support education. And then there would be a decrease in property taxes because those dollars, rather than coming directly out of the pockets of each of the property owners, would be lessened. Well, that worked for a period of time. However, we all know that, again, education costs continued to escalate, and then there wasn't really that money in the video lottery. Everybody thought, well, that supported it. Well, the costs exceeded, or the needs exceeded, what was being generated. So ultimately, in the Dugard administration, that video lottery went away, and they developed, we had budget reserves, and then we had a general revenue replacement fund that would really, excesses that were coming in at the end of the year, the state would go to those two funds, but no longer would there be this video lottery fund. Well, then after that, they started looking at, again, there was a concern in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, and it was really with ag property. And our current governor was at that time in the House in leadership, and he and a senator from Custer County were working together to find a resolution how you could assess ag property. And I believe in the House you had, who's there now, Representative Nostrup, and I believe Deb Peters, and I'm not sure if she was a representative. They were two different groups looking, and they really went to battle. There were some really hard discussions and some, you know, fighting words set trying to come with this formula. So then finally ag got settled in, going from an assessment to a productivity model. And that took years to develop what that productivity model, so you could, based on the soils and what you could produce. So that helped to then sort of adjust what ag was doing, that it was based on what they could produce rather than what it was based on land sales. Well, then they developed an ag land task force that was a continuation to go back and to look at those productivities and to make sure that there was equity there and things were moving. Well, now we fast forward where we're at right now, and you know, it's the sales of the property. And it was interesting, I was reading, I think it's Dakota Scout, I won't say, but they said it's mainly in six counties in South Dakota, West River, and of course Minnehaha, Lincoln, and those counties over here, where there's the most sense of unfairness in property taxes because of the property sales. There's been an escalation. People have come to South Dakota, we've increased, and they come with a lot of money, and what they can buy for a small amount, which is a lot of money to me, is much different than when they were. So what that has done then is escalated those housing rates, those sales, which then raises property tax. So now we're at the point that they're trying to figure out, well, how can those of us that have lived here, and now because the market value is rising around my piece of property, my home that I have owned for 50 years, nothing is going in the sense that my house is improving like those that are being purchased around me that are, and I'm the one that now can't afford my taxes. Yeah. And so I think that's part of how you look at this whole picture, how we have evolved to. And I will tell you, Representative Dubois, I don't remember, were you on the property tax summer study last year?
I was not.
I was. And so it was interesting. And of course, the merit of that study was to look more how the decisions were made on assessments, if there was consistency in the process among all the counties and how they were assessing property. But it, at the same time, what happened is that those landowners that came were from the ag sector, primarily West River, that were concerned about what was happening, that were expressing some concerns, and those people from the East River that were also expressing concerns in those counties of their rising. So basically, we've got less than 12 counties, I'm just going to say, just for a hypothetical, that really are experiencing where, and that we didn't hear from other counties about what was happening their assessments. So now we're trying to, you know, look at, and some of the opposition that I've been looking at is, you know, who's going to fare best in this? And is this really the true end? And at the same time, if you're going to take dollars less away, or you're going to allow counties and you're going to direct where they put those dollars, is that going to give any relief for the ag sector and the commercial sector?
Because what would you add to that, Linda, first of all?
I couldn't add anything.
Yeah, that's
to
pretty
it.
Comprehensive.
That's
yeah.
very comprehensive. I will say this. I remember when the video lottery was on the ballot.
Yeah.
And it was sold as, we're doing this for education, and that's why I voted for it.
Where's that money going now?
It goes right into the general fund, and it supports all of our services.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because it was replaced with something else?
Yeah.
Right. Those dollars that are left over, we have, that we're not utilizing, that you have, you know, your projections, your sales tax has been greater than you had anticipated. We have a budget reserve fund, which is your rainy day fund, so that if that was established, if we had some kind of catastrophic activity occur in South Dakota that we needed access and we needed support, there would be. But that is fixed. There's a certain amount of percentage that you can have in that.
Yep.
Well, we've reached the cap in that. And so we couldn't add anymore. So then in the Dugard administration, they sort of transitioned the video lottery to the General Revenue Replacement Fund. And so that was to take when the rainy day fund, no longer you could contribute, but you had excess dollars that, again, you would use for revenue replacement as projects or, you know, things impacted the state that became priorities. Then those excess dollars would flow to those. And there was also a cap on that revenue fund. And I do believe that that's the General Revenue Replacement Fund. Those are the dollars that we're using in some of the projects over the course of time since that's been, and that, not having to access the rainy day fund.
So true. And in fact, during the COVID years, those amounts in those funds, you know, like Jean said, like Senator Hunoff said, we capped that rainy day fund and then that general replacement fund. At one point in time, we had almost 25% in there of our budget. It was pretty significant. In fact, we tapped it recently to support prison.
So Governor Roden has sent his proposal out, which is a half penny sales tax that the counties or local groups can, what's the right
they
word?
They can assess.
They can assess. Thank you. Voters could weigh in on that at the county if they wanted to. What do we think of the governor's proposal? Representative Dubois, you go first on
you
this.
You know, thing. I took a quick look at it yesterday and today, and I know that the counties have wanted to do this. So I think from a county perspective, you're going to see some, you know, from county commissioners, you're going to see some positivity. I'm not sure how the voters are going to feel about it. You know, again, and Senator Hunhoff and I have talked about this. You take from one pocket, you got to replace it. So this half penny is similar to, all right, well, I'm going to lower your property taxes, but now I'm going to raise this over here. I'm going to assess this in the county. And then that affects everyone, you know, that affects everyone.
So, and this is part of what I don't understand about it. If I'm a homeowner, my taxes go up on things that I buy, but my taxes go down on my house. Do I come out ahead as a homeowner?
That's the question of the day. I haven't seen any data that someone has come out with and said, well, if County A, Minnehaha, where I live, if they want to invoke this, but my property taxes, is it a wash? Am I paying more? I haven't seen an analysis yet.
And plus, I think if I have an apartment, I'm not getting a benefit.
No, you're not. Yeah. You won't get a benefit from that. So your taxes are truly going up. And that's why I'm saying it's assessed on everyone. So this is going to be an interesting sell. I'm not sure.
Senator Hunhoff, who does it benefit?
Well, I'm going to do a history again. I believe within the last 7 to 10 years, there have been at least 4 bills that have come to the legislature from the county asking for the ability to tax up to 3% or whatever COLA is.
100% true.
And yeah. So every time it's come up, it gets defeated. And the answer is for the defeat is that legislators get feedback from their citizens that they don't want to allow the county to do that because they'll go wild with their spending. So, you know, that if this is specific, and I think you asked the question before, how's that going to impact you? You know, if you do allow this, it will be directed to that property tax relief. But again, you go back to say, that's just the property tax for the schools. I don't believe this includes property tax for the county. I mean, if I pay $8,000, I don't think it's equally split. I'm not sure because I haven't read what his proposal, and you'll probably get it when you if you visit with him. You know, does that mean, is it only going to education? And so then that way that's going to supplant that, but your cost or your budget for your county needs won't get any additional dollars? I don't know that. And maybe some Representative Duba, or maybe you have an answer on that.
I don't. And I think the big pushback from the counties has been this. They've continued to have, they'll come to us and say, we want to increase because we have these mandates that we can't support. Our costs are rising. Mm-hmm. You know, we're jails and services, you know, mental health, police and fire. Their costs are rising. But if this is specific only to property tax, I don't know if that will it give them relief on the others. I don't know. I mean, this is a tough nut. This is why I say we're looking at this through a property tax lens when we really should understand what are and you know I've had this discussion in appropriations with folks. What are all of our revenue sources at the state level, at the county level, at the city level? Okay, so now we understand that. What are our expense sides and why are we and we haven't even talked about how federal dollars are probably going to go down.
Yeah.
So what does this mean going forward?
Or if the Department of Education closes.
Well, supposedly we're going to get some block grants, but we don't know how much. We don't know what that means. There is no plan yet. So, you know, I applaud the governor for coming through with this. I want to see... I'm going to be dead honest. I want to see more than a summer study. We need a comprehensive look at this over time, and you got to take it a chunk at a time.
What's more than a summer study?
Well, it's an ongoing task force of some kind that is, and you'll have legislators, but then you need experts on there. You need people who are working at the county and the city level and in education, and you know coming through from different lenses so that we have stakeholders involved. Yeah. And we need people from government to talk to us about that equation side of here are our expenses, here are our revenues. We did it with education before, and then we only did it once, and we stopped, and look where we are right now.
Right. Yeah. So getting back to the work on the table needs to be these meaty topics that are looked at comprehensively, ongoing-wise. That's the work of government is what I'm hearing you say.
That's what I'm saying.
Which a lot of voters are saying when there's a bill that they think is flippant and a waste of time. They say, this is the kind of thing we want you to be working on solving all the time.
Yes, and that is government. That's what good government does. And that's the legislature needs to be involved in that. It can't just come from the executive branch. Senator Hunhoff, what are your thoughts on that statement?
Well, and I'm going to go back to that Agland Task Force. After we went to that productivity model, they established that Agland Task Force, and it continues on. And each year they meet and they relook at that. I think your concept is correct. We find a starting point.
Yes.
But I think the other point is then you need to have something continuing so you're constantly evaluating. So you don't go every 10 years and then you have, you know, people that are very upset and then they want right now. They want change and they want this put into place because my property taxes, you know, I think there needs to be planning and vision and then sustainability
yes.
with oversight continuing. And I, you know,
that's exactly what I'm saying. I agree with you 100%. We can't just keep doing these 4-meeting summer studies and call it good and walk away and say, oh, well, we brought a bill. No, it's got to be ongoing.
Senator Hunhoff, you mentioned people coming from out of state and what happened to all our, you know, people who owned houses, modest houses especially, all of a sudden the value, you know, doubled, tripled. But you weren't planning on moving. You're just living here, and now you can't afford to fix your house. And you also, the houses around you that are selling, you're now you can't afford your taxes. Nobody wants to talk about an income tax. It's really unpopular. But this would be one of the reasons to say, like, people who came in with really big incomes did things in my neighborhood that have affected me when I have a fraction of their income, and now I might not be able to live in my neighborhood anymore. So there is a reality to that, even though the solution is not a politically – I'm not saying it's a solution. I am not saying property taxes or income tax is a solution. What I am saying is income matters in the conversation, and that's why it sometimes comes up. How do we get through this disparity of, you know, people in neighborhoods that have been there a long time who now can't afford their neighborhood anymore? Because of people who came from out of state.
And it's especially true for the elderly.
Yeah.
More than, because they're on fixed income.
Yeah.
Again, no simple solution. I don't have a magic bullet for that right now.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what we saw, what happened, occurred as a result of the pandemic and rising costs. And so people were able to, you know, they said, I don't want to live here. I'm going to go to South Dakota where I can be free and I'm gonna come in with $500,000 and I can buy twice the house that I had in California.
Yeah. Senator Hunhoff, help me. You hear what I'm asking there, I hope.
I do.
Help me sort through that.
I'll agree with Representative Duba. It is not an easy, but again, if you had the kind of analysis that we've been talking about, so you could establish.
Yes.
Now, the other thing we don't talk about is free market.
Mm-mm.
So I live in a neighborhood and somebody across the street is somebody that's been there. I've been here. But now I've got somebody that's willing to come in and pay 3 times of what my house is valued at. So I'm supposed to think, oh, I don't want to sell because that person across the street can't afford the taxes. Mm-hmm. You know, that's
right.
The other side
right.
of the coin that we never talk about is
yeah.
that those people took the opportunity and they decided to sell their house for that money and whatever they did with that or wherever they're going to go.
Yeah.
You know, in a sense that your sale has penalized you now because Hunhoff sold and I'm still sitting here. But isn't that my right for a free market to do it? And so now we're looking for a solution. How do you make my free right and also a free right for you whose your taxes are going up? That's why, you know, I don't think it's simple. You've got to get to the basis and can you find some equity there that homeowner, you know, if you keep their property taxes down, what about that person that bought this house? And I know in some of the legislation, there was some freezing and then there was some going back and it would not impact. But what do you do with these people that keep paying these big dollars for these houses?
Right.
Unless something stops and they no longer come to South Dakota. So, you know, I'm sorry, I don't have an answer.
But that's a really smart point because you do forget somebody, my neighbor, made a lot of money on
yes.
that and good for them.
And I, you know, if the
you could sell if that's what
if
you want,
the opportunity
then sell your
presented
house.
Itself
yeah.
and I wanted to, where I live right now, just 2 blocks away from here,
yeah.
Every week I get a call and
yeah.
they offer me a ridiculous amount of money.
But where are you going to go if you sell your house? There's
point
you can't
well
buy
taken.
Anything else.
That's the point. The point is in yeah. this market,
yeah.
prices are high. Plus, I like where I live.
Right, exactly.
So, you know, it can work both ways. But at the end of the day, yeah, they're going to offer it up.
So a sustained long-term look at revenue and these different revenue streams
yes.
and spending needs to happen. And it can't just be the executive branch. That's sort of what I'm hearing.
It cannot. It
yeah.
needs to be – the legislature needs to be involved. That's why you
mm-hmm.
– and we have experts in there that can do this.
Yeah.
And you also need to go outside. So you need to have county people and city people and, you know, people in education. You can't make this about this.
Yeah.
And ag people. You've got to have a comprehensive look. Now, it's hard to do because that's a big group of folks. But if you target it well and you've got strong leadership, you can have a long range plan.
I want to pivot a little bit because you mentioned leadership, and I'm thinking of Governor Rodin and the prison project reset and what needs to happen going forward. And maybe we'll start with Representative Duba this time and then bring Senator Hunhoff into the conversation. Is this a leadership test for him to say, like, all this water has gone under the bridge with what the prison project should be? I'm hitting reset. I'm gathering 22 people with more public input around the table. We're asking ourselves these three important questions. Do we need a new prison? Where should it be? How big should it be? And where should it be at? Pretty much everybody agrees that we need a new prison. That's an obvious yes.
Not everybody. We have a few that still think
that
we can, you know, fix the one we've got.
Patch the walls. Okay, fair. Yeah. Not everybody agrees that. What do you think of this as a test of his leadership ability, Linda?
To be perfectly honest with you, I understand why they did it. It's very disappointing. As a member of the Appropriations Committee and the prison study, to now, I guess it'll be almost 3 years ago now. Mm. We were very open and public about all of it, and we had numerous hearings. And so what we've seen now is a group of individuals who are balking at what the plan is. And I truly believe it's not just the cost that's driving this, it's where it's located. It's become a political football. But did the governor have any choice? Well, they couldn't pass the bill. So what else are you going to do? So they're starting on, I believe, the 2nd of April. I think they've got 2 days of meetings here in Sioux Falls. I'm trying to decide if I want to go show up at one of those meetings, and I might. Because I invested a lot of my time and energy in those decisions along with Senator Hunhoff. Do they have a choice? No, because right now there's, quite frankly, misinformation out there. Yeah. So we need several people that have fresh sets of eyes. There are some holdovers on that group, but most of these people coming in, fresh set of eyes, and now they're going to be in the seats that we were in. And I really hope that they walk in there with an open mind and understand what is looking us in the face.
Will they all have the same facts? Can we agree on that anymore? Because I think it's in the executive order. He actually writes that there is a process to make sure they're all working off the same information.
You have to work off the same information, but there still will be open public testimony.
Sure.
And we still have individuals out there who like to provide misinformation. And so you can choose to hear it and ignore it or believe it. There will be a lot going on behind the scenes. I got to trust the committee that they're going to do their job. But there's going to be a lot going on behind the scenes.
Yeah. Senator Hunhoff, your thoughts on what Governor Rodin has in front of him here and how he's proceeding?
Well, I would agree with Representative Duba. He's where he's at right now with, I guess, the consequences that have come out. But I will go back to, you know, we spent 2 years. We certainly heard the consultant. We heard other individuals. We listened to everything. We tried to identify. We've been to the prison. I've been there every year that I've been on appropriations and have seen the conditions there. And it was not like we did this in a very overnight fashion and just projected. You know, some of the same individuals that are questioning the size of the facility need to look at the laws we keep passing every year that are felonies that are requiring institutionalization. Mm-hmm. Our numbers continue to escalate. Now, nothing was discussed about, they did talk about a little bit about parole or whatever, but again, it's a one shot, one project, not a looking at the whole system. I think the other thing is, this is change, and change has stages that it goes through. And I've lived through two of those. So when former Governor Jankel walked into Springfield with security and told the people there, we're closing the college and it's going to become a prison, believe me, that was a very tense moment in my life as to how all those people in that community were reacting. What happened? It went on. It became a prison. And now the community embraces it because it's economic development. Fast forward a few years, Yankton College. That was just the epitome of our community in Yankton, right in the middle of a very old, historic Yankton, the founding area and everything. The people, again, they reacted. We can't have this here. We had issues. We had all kinds of narratives going on about the bad things that would happen. That is now a very beautiful campus. We have not had incidences. It's one that, because of the level of those prisoners, doesn't require barricades or fences around. They live across the street from the facility. It brought economic development to this community. It brought a beautiful resurrected campus, even though it's a federal prison. It brought people, it brought jobs, and it stimulated the economy. But it had to go through stages. And I would agree with Representative Duba in the sense that this is a change, and people are, you know, certainly the unknown, and they give examples or whatever, what could happen. I have to remind myself, so when I was sitting on the property tax summer study, people from that area did come in and they were talking about their property and what the level that their taxes were rising so high, and the sale of the property and everything. When we had anything about the prison and those individuals that were living in those communities came in, they would come and do their presentation as to why they raised concerns, and certainly valid issues or concerns. But one of them that they expressed, that it would devalue their property assessments, and they didn't want to see that done. So I'm thinking here, okay, both sides of the street here, where's the win for anybody living there? Because it's either devalue if I have a prison there, or if I don't, then I need property tax relief because it's so high. Again, I think it's stages. And I think the unintended consequences in the future, if the state decides to do something with any kind of facility or a capital asset and put it outside in a community or whatever, if the people rally that this isn't the right thing to do, the precedent has been set. We've already, you know, if that location is changed, we've already done that. Will that then create other scenarios out there that'll be more difficult for the state to do anything outside of Pierre if it's necessary to do?
Here's the roadmap.
And the thing that is so difficult with this is that we're stewards of the taxpayers' dollars.
Yeah.
And we have watched this and looked at this so closely throughout the 2 to 3 years that we worked on this. And now, because of the reset, we stand to cost ourselves $40 million minimum and possibly up to $100 million more dollars. And everyone calls it the billion-dollar prison. Well, we weren't there yet, but we're going to get there very quickly. I talk to a lot of the folks that have homes around there, some do not. It's just it's an interesting situation. Now, I personally live within a mile of the current prison, and I have no concerns. I understand that they built their dream homes and it's out, but we took care as we were working with the Secretary of Corrections about making that aesthetic so that you wouldn't know what was behind the rows and rows of trees. So it's not like you're going to look out your back window and, 600 feet away, there are prisoners out there looking at you. That is not a true statement, but that is what is being sold to the public. And it's unfortunate. I believe when all is said and done, they're going to come back and they're going to say, this was a solid proposal. Maybe they won't have 1,500 beds, but as Senator Hunhoff has pointed out, we continue to change our statutes so we can lock more people up. So if we really wanted to do change, the prison is operationally how we support folks and how we get them the education they need. Over here, we should have a concurrent thing going on with justice reform. That is important. We need to take a serious look at that. But I don't know if we've got the stomach for it in this state.
All right. What else did we not get to today? Veto day. Anything from veto day that you want to wrap up with, Senator Hunhoff?
No, the legislature spoke, and certainly I can appreciate it. It is challenging, as everything comes in, it's out of state that's coming in, and are the locals really involved? But I think the process we currently have in place is a good one.
100% agree with that statement, and I'm glad to see that the governor vetoed the bill, and it was upheld in the Senate.